Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. Not all heroes get heroes' welcomes, and not all heroes' welcomes are given to heroes. But that was the sort of welcome accorded Iranian diplomats expelled from the United States after President Carter broke relations with Iran when they arrived in Tehran this morning. Thousands of people shouting death to America greeted them at the airport. That happened a short while after the militants holding the American hostages broadcast another piece of anti-American propaganda reported from Tehran by Doug Tunnell.
The militants call their film Spy Confessions. Broadcast on Iranian television early today, it shows two of the hostages telling of alleged espionage activities at the American embassy before the takeover and during the Shah's regime. One of the Americans describes a military aircraft, which he says was fitted out with cameras for aerial photography. The other describes how from a storage room in the compound, embassy personnel once monitored Iranian communications. According to the Persian language narrative, which covers part of the film, one of the hostages claims that photographs of American congressmen in the nude with relatives of the Shah were kept on file. According to militant spokesmen, one of the hostages who took part was Joseph Subic Jr., an Army staff sergeant who also appeared in a film produced by his captors last Christmas. The identity of the second hostage remains unknown. Doug Tunnell, CBS News, Tehran.
The nine members of the European Common Market today again denounced Iranian authorities for not ending the hostage crisis and agreed they will ask Iran to release the Americans now in their 159th day of captivity. They will ask President Bonnie Sauter to press for an exact date for the release, along with details on how it should be handled. But the European trading community has not reached agreement on President Carter's call for diplomatic and economic sanctions. That's a matter of special concern to Japan, as we hear from John Harris in Tokyo.
Japan's chief cabinet secretary declared that the country is in an extremely serious spot. The government is fearful of straining relations with the United States over the American request for sanctions against Iran. The Japanese have two important links with Iran. They get 10% of their oil there, and they are under heavy pressure to finish a giant petrochemical plant under construction there. Prime Minister O'Hara held a special meeting with five of his cabinet ministers to consider what to do about the American requests for support. At the meeting, government leaders decided to wait for the results of the European Foreign Ministers meeting in Lisbon. A final decision will likely be slow in coming. The cabinet has committed itself so far only to coming to some decision before O'Hara leaves for Washington nearly 3 weeks from now. On the Tokyo foreign exchange market, the U.S. dollar took a tumble for the second day in a row, some of it due to nervousness over Iran. The dollar lost 3% of its value in one day's trading. John Harris, CBS News, Tokyo.
The dollar is also down on the European exchanges, and so is gold. It's trading below yesterday's closing levels in both London and Zurich. The United States is getting set for possible military activity in the Indian Ocean area. Desert camouflage is being painted on tanks, artillery, trucks, and other military equipment for a force of 10,000 men. Defense Department officials say the materiel is being conditioned at the Marine Corps Logistics Support Base in Albany, Georgia, for movement to the Indian Ocean region in early summer. They say the primary loading port will probably be Wilmington, North Carolina. They emphasize that the projected shipment is not directly related to the Iranian crisis, although it could be used in that connection if needed. Defense officials declined to discuss details of military options the U.S. is reviewing in case the hostage crisis remains unsolved. They do say the Carter administration is now past the point where it can delay punitive action of some sort against Iran much longer. The most likely option seems to be a selective blockade or quarantine of the Persian Gulf, the aim being to block Iranian oil exports. But all that is still in the realm of speculation. Egyptian President Sadat flies home late today after some final engagements in Washington. CBS News diplomatic correspondent Marvin Kalb reports.
Sadat returns to Cairo later today, tired, satisfied, but not overwhelmingly so, about his visit to Washington. He is ready to attend another three-way summit with President Carter and Prime Minister Begin next month at Camp David to achieve an agreement on Palestinian autonomy on the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. But this time, he told CBS News, he wants this summit to be well-prepared, virtually risk-free. Not like the first Camp David get-together, which nevertheless produced the accords that led to the Egypt-Israel peace treaty. Sadat acknowledged that Egypt is now a forward base for American strategic power in the Middle East, based on equality between the two countries. A base, he said, for, among other things, the U.S. to launch a rescue mission for the hostages in Tehran, if that's what it wants, or to send military help to a shaken oil-rich Arab state in the Persian Gulf. Sadat said he is very worried about the political stability of Saudi Arabia and thinks President Assad of Syria will be ousted from power by this summer. Marvin Kalb, CBS News, Washington.
Israel is sending reinforcements to its newly established positions in southern Lebanon. Bob Simon has details.
United Nations spokesmen here claim that Israel is continuing to bolster its presence in southern Lebanon, that there are now between 300 and 350 troops, 16 tanks, and at least 12 other armored vehicles in three locations north of the border. These UN sources say that some Israeli units have established positions more than 3.5 miles inside Lebanon, that some of them are in the enclaves controlled by Major Haddad's Christian militias, but that others are in zones patrolled by the United Nations. The UN says Israeli bulldozers have been at work, cutting roads between Israeli tank positions and building defensive perimeters around these positions. All of this seems to indicate that Jerusalem plans to keep these forces inside southern Lebanon for a while. Monday's Palestinian raid, which left three Israelis dead, convinced the command here that neither United Nations forces nor the Christian militias are capable of protecting Israel's northern communities. Bob Simon, CBS News, Tel Aviv.
President Carter's economic policies came under attack yesterday from home builders, contractors, construction workers, and realtors. Their demonstrations took the form of marches on several state capitals and traffic blockades in various cities around the country. One home builder, Jack Selza, sounded off in the middle of a traffic tie-up in Hartford, Connecticut. "We want the public and the government to know," he said, "that if high interest rates continue, there are going to be 30,000 unemployed construction workers." Selza, who is president of the Hartford Home Builders Association, added, "We are scared as hell, not only for ourselves, but because the public doesn't know this is not just another round of high interest rates. And unless the administration does something about those rates soon," he said, "we're going to crack our whip in November." Thousands of other home builders gathered at the Utah State Capitol in Salt Lake City to demonstrate against the administration's policies. Protesters in Wyoming drove tractors, trailers, and automobiles through Cheyenne and encircled the Wyoming State Capitol. Former Budget Director Bert Lance is expected to take the stand in his own defense, probably today, in what Robert Shackney in Atlanta reports is now a far more limited case of bank fraud.
Yesterday, Judge Charles Moy dismissed 9 of the remaining 21 counts against Lance, and that reduced what originally had been a case involving $20 million of allegedly illegal transactions into a set of charges that now involve only $1 million. Still, the remaining charges are serious enough. 9 counts alleging illegal misapplication of bank funds when Lance arranged loans for his wife, his son, and his business associates, and 2 charges in which Lance is accused of overstating his financial worth by concealing his debts. There are, in addition, 13 criminal charges against Lance's 3 co-defendants. In narrowing the case, Judge Moy ruled on technical grounds, or on the ground that prosecutors had not proven the charges in question. The remaining case against Lance and the others is largely a paper case based on bank records. There's been little directly damaging testimony from the 159 witnesses who've so far taken the stand. Robert Shackney, CBS News, Atlanta.
Ronald Reagan has been discussing some details of his economic policy as he presses his campaign for the Republican presidential nomination. Jerry Bowen reports from Grand Island, Nebraska.
Reagan acknowledged that the sweeping tax cuts and tax credits he has proposed as part of his economic policy would have to be phased in gradually and may have to be limited in their scope. During the course of his campaign, Reagan has endorsed a 30% across-the-board cut in income taxes over 3 years, tax credits on private school tuition and dividends, and elimination of taxes on estates and savings accounts. Asked if he had any idea what the total cut would be, Reagan said no, though it is known the candidate was advised of the figures more than a month ago. Reagan's proposals would result in at least a $105 billion tax cut, which would severely affect the federal budget. Informed of this at a news conference, Reagan responded his proposals would have to be phased in, that his suggestions were only goals or targets, in effect, not absolute guarantees. He declined to be more specific on his economic goals, saying the specifics may come in October if he wins the Republican nomination. Jerry Bowen, CBS News, with the Reagan campaign in Grand Island, Nebraska.
Yesterday in Texas, Reagan accused the Carter administration of inaction in not joining the international effort to help the 10,000 would-be Cuban exiles at the Peruvian embassy in Havana.
What's new in kitchens? What's new in the bath? What's new in smart and exciting new decorator concepts that can make your home look smart and new? Well, you can see what's new in Builder Supply's brand new Decorator Display Center. You'll find everything there from cabinets to doors, new lighting ideas, new finish materials. It's kind of like browsing through a wonderland of decorator finishing ideas that you could almost recreate in your home to make it the home of your dreams. So take just a little time out and go browsing at the Display Center at Builder's Supply. It's located right behind Builder's Big Hardware Store at 490 East Sunny Dunes Road in Palm Springs. Friendly, expert sales representatives are always ready to help and explain how the ideas you'll see might be worked into your kitchen or other area. So drop in and get acquainted with this totally unique display and sales center at Builder's Supply, where, of course, so many, many good ideas get started.
Soyuz 35 today is safely in orbit around the Earth, heading for a link-up with Salyut 6. Gordon Joseloff in Moscow has details on Soviet Russia's latest space mission.
In the first report on the mission, since shortly after its start, the TASS news agency says all systems are functioning normally and the cosmonauts feel well. There's no word when the link-up with the orbiting Salyut 6 space station will come, but judging by past flights, if all goes well, it will be sometime tomorrow. Flight engineer Valery Rumin, making his third trip into space, overnight has become the nation's most popular cosmonaut. People are marveling at the 40-year-old engineer's ability to make back-to-back space flights. He was one of two cosmonauts who spent a record-breaking 175 days in space last year. And here he is again, going for what undoubtedly will be an attempt to surpass that record. Not everyone, though, considers a space flight the top story of the day here. The TASS news agency, in its daily summary of the Soviet press, mentions it only after first noting that President Leonid Brezhnev has begun a vacation. Gordon Joseloff, CBS News, Moscow.
The 21-nation Council of Europe this morning denounced the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan and called for immediate withdrawal of Soviet troops. British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher's call for a boycott of the Summer Olympic Games in Moscow because of the Kremlin's Afghan move has suffered another setback. The British Amateur Fencing Association, which voted overwhelmingly 2 months ago in favor of the boycott, has reversed itself and now says it will send a team to Moscow. Only the British Hockey and Equestrian Associations are now supporting Mrs. Thatcher's call for a boycott of the Summer Games. The Puerto Rican Olympic Committee has also voted to send a team to Moscow. And that's a rebuff not only to President Carter, but to the governor of the Commonwealth, Carlos Romero Barceló. Barceló already has threatened to withhold government funds from Puerto Rican athletes who take part in the Summer Games. In El Salvador, continuing political violence has claimed more than 30 more lives, and another cabinet officer has resigned from the embattled civilian military junta. The deputy minister of economics quit yesterday and left the country for what were described as personal and health reasons. This is the 10th day of the transit strike in New York City, and about the best thing that can be said about traffic conditions is that they're better than they were yesterday when almost 4 inches of rain fell on the city. But not much better, because the downpour flooded many roads and highways, and some of them are still closed this morning. A spokesman for the city's traffic department says jokingly that meter maids are being issued scuba gear. And he has a word of advice for motorists: put a pair of oars in your trunk. Dallas Townsend, CBS News.